It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
Welcome to KSL Unrivaled. I'm Ben Anderson, joined by Tom Hackett as we fill in for Alex Keery and Scott Mitchell today. They are both out of the office, so very excited to be able to jump in and get back at it. You can always tweet at us, respond to us, at Ben's Hoops on Twitter, and of course, Tom Kant. Hackett. Tom, two-time Ray Guy Award winner?
Yes.
Twice?
Yes, Ben. We don't need to go into that, though, please.
Why not?
Because it's embarrassing.
Why is it embarrassing?
I have a hard time listening to introductions of myself.
Huh.
That's normal, right?
For some people love it.
Really?
Sure. Some people want to have all their accolades read out as often as possible.
Right. No, I'm good. I studied up at the University of Utah and partook in a little football.
Everyone knows who you are.
Well, no, I doubt it.
Everyone knows who Tom Hackett is.
Anyway, we're happy. And it's kind of ironic we're doing a radio show together.
Well, yeah. So I wanted to talk about your Twitter handle actually for a second, because Tom Kant Hackett actually changed after you lost your job, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Who replaced you at that job?
You.
That was me.
At Ben's Hoops. Replaced me.
So yeah, I took your job one time. And we did some radio together over there a little bit. I would come on and jump on the show.
We did.
And then I took your job.
And then you did.
And then I lost my job. And you were working at KSLsports.com. And you vouched for me, everyone said.
I did. Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of you. When I lost my job, you reached out and said best of luck. And I said I appreciate that, knowing that you were going to take my job, even though the public didn't know. I wished you the best of luck in replacing me, which is very easy. And then it was funny because you obviously do some work here at KSLsports.com now as well. You come in the first day. And I think, Ben, correct me if I'm wrong, the first comment you made to me when we kind of locked eyes...
Yeah.
Was, hey, Tom, I'm here to take your job again.
Again.
Yeah, again.
I'll just keep following your footsteps.
And I go to sleep, actually, like just listening to those words come out of your mouth.
Well, I don't think I'm going to do it again. We cover a little bit different things now.
I'm joking. No, it's a pleasure, though.
Yeah.
It is a pleasure.
Anyways, I cover the Utah Jazz for KSLsports.com. I'm the host of the Jazz Notes podcast. Also, I do jump on here. On Unrivaled with Alex and Scott occasionally as we break down some Jazz basketball. Likewise with Tom. Tom, you've got a couple of podcasts going, though, yeah?
I follow Utah football pretty closely. Real Salt Lake, I'm a big fan of the Round Ball. And then, yeah, very, very rarely I jump on with Alex and Scott to talk whatever they want to talk about. But I'm around, and KSL Sports is a great place to work, and we have fun.
And then you and Scott are, of course, on the official call.
We are, yes. We are. I'm sidelines in the elements, and Scotty's up there in a nice booth.
We got a big show for you today. We're going to talk a lot about Utah's season. Obviously, as Tom was on the sideline for all of the games, played there, knows it inside and out. We'll break down a little bit of what happened, whether it was a good season, whether it was a disappointing season, what our expectations were before the year started. And then, of course, get you ready for the bowl game. The Jazz had a very nice win last night, their first in 3 weeks over the Minnesota Timberwolves. Not their first win, but I would say their first good win in 3 weeks, which coincidentally last came against the Minnesota Timberwolves. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Jordan Love declaring for the NFL draft and kind of some year-end wrap-up, including Time named their person of the year. We'll tell you who our person of the year would be when it comes to the world of sports here in the state of Utah. But let's get to The Cut, powered by KSL Sports.
The Cut at 7:05.
The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. It's 7:05. Here's what made the cut.
The Cut, powered by KSL Sports. And Tom, I think one of the clips we want to let you hear really quickly is Kyle Whittingham getting you ready. He had his press conference today for the Alamo Bowl with the Texas coach, Tom Herman. And one of the things they were asked about was, what do you do about seniors and whether or not seniors should play or will play, especially if they have an NFL future in the bowl game? Here's that cut. All right, there's Kyle Whittingham talking about the seniors, and basically what Witt said is that he's hasn't heard from anybody that anyone's planning on sitting out. Now, that could change. We're still 3 weeks out from New Year's Eve when Utah's going to be taking on Texas in the Alamo Bowl. First of all, have you heard anything? I mean, you know these guys pretty well. You're on the sidelines. What's your sense of what they're going
to
do?
I have not heard anything. They keep that pretty close to the chest. I imagine a number of them don't play, Ben, for good reason. I think we could talk about bowl games and what the future of bowl games looks like for a very long time. However, if I were in the shoes of Zach Moss, Bradley and I, Lecky Fotu, even Terrell Burgess, I wouldn't play. Anybody that pays attention to Utah football, Ben,
sure,
would have seen Julian Blackman
right,
literally just slip on the new sod that was put into Levi Stadium to put the Pac-12 logo in the middle of the field. Non-contact injury. The play was over. He was trying to slow down his back pedal, slipped, buckled his knee. We don't know the extent of the injury. It's not good. It's season-ending, which tells me it's either an ACL or an MCL. Yeah. Hoping for an MCL, of course. If it's an MCL, then there's a chance he may well be able to compete at the Combine. If it's an ACL, then that really does hurt his draft stock. He might not get drafted if it's an ACL. It's that severe. So
yeah.
Why would you risk something when you don't have to? I mean, the whole risk versus reward conversation is it means something when it comes to bowl games and seniors.
And everyone remembers Jalen Smith with Notre Dame against Ohio State. I mean, he was going to be a top 10 pick at worst. He ended up slipping out of the first round. Now, he was smart, and these guys can do this. And actually, with autonomy, you remember that big conversation in college football a couple of years back. One of the things they can do now is they can take out insurance policies. I should say they, as the school, can take out insurance policies for their players, where if they get injured, those can be paid out. If you do have an NFL future, and you know Jalen Smith, I think, ended up getting something crazy. He was getting, you know, X amount of $1,000 per draft spot that he dropped. So by falling to the second round, he actually did recoup some of that money, and he's turned into a superstar in the NFL. So it's not a big deal for him. But for a guy like Julian Blackman, or for your average NFL player whose career lasts 3 to 4 years, and you're hoping to get $600,000 to start your life, you know, $700,000 to start your life and be able to buy a house and get everything started, yeah, that's an absolutely enormous loss. And where Zach Moss probably projects to get drafted, where Bradley and I probably projects to get drafted, Terrell Burgess, those types of players, Utah might not be in a spot where those guys all feel like they want to step on the field right away, because you can't fall from the third round to the seventh round. That absolutely changes your future.
Correct. And I think the bowl game plays a role in this as well. I think if Utah had made it to the Rose Bowl, made it to the college football playoff, then you play, right? You're creating history. You're taking your program, your school to places they haven't been before. And a lot of scouts will watch those games more so than the Alamo Bowl. The Alamo Bowl is not a New Year's Six Bowl. It's considered, though, the best bowl game outside of the New Year's
yep.
Six, but still, it's the Alamo Bowl. There's only one human being up there on the hill that cares about the Alamo Bowl and whether or not that team wins or not. It's Coach Kyle Whittingham, and it's because he has bonus money associated to the win.
Huh? You think that's the only reason? He's got some pride too.
Is he though? Like, does he's achieved so much?
I think here's what's crazy about Kyle Whittingham. Every practice seems to matter. I mean, you know him better than I do, but I've talked to him after practices. Every detail seems to matter to Kyle Whittingham, which is why he's such a great coach. It's also why he's been able to do it for so long in one spot, because he pays attention to every little aspect of it. Now, do bowl games mean less now than they used to? I think that's a good debate, and I think Kyle Whittingham probably recognizes that they do. But is this the best bowl game Utah's gone to since they've been in the Pac-12? I mean, inarguably,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, it is. It certainly is.
So Witt probably still wants to go out and show, hey, we've won 11 games this season. Let's get it up to 12 wins and show that we can get to that number. And if Utah wins, they're guaranteed a top 10 finish in college football this year. And that's a big achievement.
Sure. And I'm sure Kyle Whittingham also has bonus money associated to
and
that.
And the money.
The players don't get anything.
You're
guaranteed to get bowl gifts. And I think they've come out, although I'd have to double check, but bowl packages,
yeah,
people around the state of Utah seem to care what the players get. I think there's some cool watch on offer for the Alamo Bowl. But regardless, Coach Whittingham cares. Whether or not they win, the players don't. And when he finds out that the likes of Zach Moss, Bradley and I, Leckie Fotu, will not be playing, then it's a bona fide spring camp practice.
You don't think they're going to play?
Why would you? Really? Why would you play? It's the Alamo Bowl.
Let's talk about that coming up next. Why would Bradley and I, why would Zach Moss play? He's Tom Hackett. I'm Ben Anderson. This is KSL Unrivaled. KSL Unrivaled, Alex Carey and Scott Mitchell. They are out today, replaced by me, Ben Anderson, and of course, Tom Hackett, former Utah football great. You can find us on Twitter at Ben's Hoops and at Tom Can't Hackett. You can always read us at KSLSports.com. Love to have you jump on, see our articles. You can also, as I mentioned, find us on Twitter. You can find the entire station on Twitter at KSL Sports. All right, Tom, we've been talking a little Utah football, recapping the season. Talking about the Alamo Bowl, because today Kyle Whittingham and Tom Herman had their press conference talking about, you know, what they expect, what this game means to them. It's a good bowl game. It's unfortunate it's not a New Year's Six bowl game because with, what, 2 weeks to go, maybe even after Utah basically beat Washington, it felt like that New Year's Six bowl game was nearly guaranteed.
I have a lot of problems with college football.
Yeah.
I'm sure you do as well. But one of my problems is Utah basically was punished because they were blown out in the championship game. If Utah hadn't have made the championship game, right, they went 11-1. It's just USC won all the conference games they needed to, and they had the tiebreaker over Utah. So let's just assume USC made it to the conference championship game. Utah didn't, but they still had an 11-win season. You better believe they're going to New Year's Six Bowl.
You think they would be,
yeah,
had they not played in the national championship or in the Pac-12 championship game?
They were the number 5th team in the country.
Huh.
And they wouldn't have gotten penalized for losing the championship game, right?
Right.
So maybe they drop one or two spots just because, and they get punished for not making the championship game. But they got beat pretty good in the championship game, and they end up not making New Year's Six Bowl, I think. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
It seems wrong.
You're right, and there's always a recency bias in college football. And that's one of the many issues and why a lot of people are arguing for an 18 playoff, and we can talk about that coming up here in about 30 minutes, what the value of that might be. And, you know, the funny thing is Utah still probably doesn't make it in the 18 playoff right this year, so I'm not sure it helps any of our local teams, but the value of these bowl games now has changed significantly. I mean, even in the last 5 years, it's changed significantly because the money in the NFL is so great, and actually somewhat because those guaranteed contracts now in the first round that you get, or the caps in the payments for those first round players has changed, and it's slotted now as opposed to, you know, if you were Jamarcus Russell or whoever was the first pick got $75 million, whatever ridiculous number they were getting early on, with absolutely no sense of whether or not they were ever going to work out in football. Those guys were getting huge money, and the more money you can make, the better. Go be an athlete, make as much money as you can, and retire and disappear if you have to. That's good for you. I don't have an issue with that, but because the money is less now with these first-round picks, especially at the top, you have more guys sitting out these games.
Sure. It to me, makes total sense. What's crazy is to think back just a couple years ago, Ben, you would have been working in the market. I was around. I remember Christian McCaffrey came out from Stanford. Leonard Fournette was coming out of LSU, and they both declared that they weren't going to play in the bowl game. And anybody that had anything to do with college football erupted.
Yep.
And they said, this is nonsense. This is crazy. And here we are talking today about the likelihood of somebody like Zach Moss, who isn't nearly as nationally recognized as Christian McCaffrey or Leonard Fournette.
Not a guaranteed first-round pick any stretch.
No, he's probably, you know, maybe a second round, probably more likely a third round, if we're being honest. You know, Zach Moss, Bradley and I, Leckie Fotu, throw them all in the same boat. Jalen Johnson, somebody that we haven't mentioned either. He's probably, in my opinion anyway, he's probably going to be the first Ute taken off the board. But regardless, they shouldn't play in the bowl game because it's not a smart business decision for them to play in the bowl game. They risk so much, and they really don't get that much in return. Like, what do you get in return? You get to say that you were a part of a 12-win Utah football team, the first time that anybody had ever achieved that at the University of Utah, and because we had such a great season, we beat the Texas Longhorns in the Alamo Bowl.
Yeah.
Like, what? Nobody cares?
Nobody cares. I'm with you. Nobody cares. Fans care. Local Utah fans care. nationally, it doesn't move the needle even a little bit. No. And certainly NFL scouts don't care.
They could care less. They're probably telling these guys not to play.
Should Tyler Huntley play?
That is tricky. What are your thoughts?
I would love to see him play. As a fan here in the state of Utah of our local college football, I want to see Tyler Huntley play because Tyler Huntley's season this year has been maybe the most surprising season of any athlete I remember in the state of Utah in an extraordinarily long time. I mean, I can't remember the last time somebody who we had that much info on already, and I don't even want to say preconceived notions. They weren't preconceived. We'd watched him play. You know, he got handed the reins to Utah football as a sophomore and took over from Troy Williams. And I thought I knew who he was. And I thought that was going to be what held Utah back this season and might prevent them from being able to get to the Pac-12 championship game again or make it to a New Year's Six bowl game. I didn't think it was going to be some of Utah's other issues. And Tyler Huntley came and proved me wrong. And I think for the better of sports in the state of Utah. I mean, it's fantastic he came out and did what he did. So I would love to see Tyler Huntley play because I would love to see him for another game. The reason for Tyler Huntley to play is it might be his last chance to play competitive football.
I think he should play. Although I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't. The reason I think he should play is simply because of the performance he put up against the Oregon Ducks. It wasn't good. It wasn't pretty. It was by far the worst performance we've seen from Tyler Huntley this season. He's still on the edge from what I've been hearing, whether or not he gets drafted or not. He certainly, I think, played himself into a camp.
Yeah, he'll get a cup of coffee in the NFL.
He will. He will. But there's a difference between going undrafted and being drafted, as I found out. And I think he plays because he doesn't want to end on that sour note in the last bit of film the scouts will be watching for the next 5-odd months prior to the NFL draft. You know, will be that Oregon game, the biggest game of the year, and the performance was not great from Tyler. However, the elements were hard to deal with, although Justin Herbert seemed to handle them a bit better than Tyler.
I think the good thing that Tyler Huntley could do by playing in this game is there's going to be NFL scouts there looking at Sam Ehlinger from Texas, who is expected to be a future top pick at quarterback, or has that potential, because he's a star and had a great freshman year last year, was okay again this season, certainly not. It didn't take Texas to where Texas wanted to be, but is going to be on the NFL draft radar and is already on the NFL draft radar. So if Tyler Huntley could come in where guys are looking at scouting an Ehlinger already and have a huge game and outperform him, which probably isn't that crazy, especially if you don't get Zach Moss out there playing, where Utah's going to feel like they need to throw the ball more. I think Andy Ludwig understands they're playing a little more freely. Maybe he opens up he loosens up the reins a little bit. Not that he was, you know, overly protective of Huntley, but Utah's goal was to make it to the Pac-12 championship game. He's accomplished that. Now I think it's time to open it up a little bit more. Maybe you can see a huge game from Tyler Huntley. And I will say this, a huge game from Huntley in a bowl game against a team with Texas's name will be a talking point for him when we get to the NFL draft combine, when we get to the NFL draft, and we're talking 5th, 6th, 7th round. If you're looking for another quarterback to bring in on a flyer, people will go back and reference, oh, did Tyler Huntley have 300 yards against Texas? If he does, that's great for him, and that's why he absolutely should play.
I agree. I've been bashing a fair bit on the Alamo Bowl to start the show, and I guess for good reason. I'm not the only one. I've heard many Utah fans out there share similar thoughts. I will say there are positives, I think, Ben, coming out of this game. You're in Texas, big recruiting ground.
Huge recruiting.
So if you can put up a good performance.
And playing Texas.
Right. Get a number of recruits from the state of Texas to come to the game, show them what you're all about, is a positive. And like you said, playing Texas, one of the perennial powerhouses of college football, even though they're not quite back yet, as much as their fans disbelief. But they're a good football team.
They might never
7
be back.
7-5. Ugh.
He's Tom Hackett. I'm Ben Anderson. It's KSL Unrivaled, powered by KSL Sports. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Jordan Love. Speaking of quarterbacks going to the NFL draft, and the Jazz finally get a good win over the Minnesota Timberwolves. We'll break it down. Stick around.
KSL's Unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Carey on KSL News Radio.
KSL Unrivaled, Ben Anderson, Tom Hackett filling in today for Alex Carey and Scott Mitchell. They'll be back soon. At some point, they'll be back. I'm not sure. Good job.
I think Carey's in Spain.
Huh.
And then an irrational decision was made by Mr. Mitchell overnight, decided to jump on a jet plane to Florida.
That's not irrational. It's cold here.
It
it's
is
warm
cold
there.
He does want the beach, he
Seems
says.
Extraordinarily rational.
Get the big rig out and get some sun on it.
You can find us on Twitter. Follow Tom at Tom Can't Hack It. You can find me at Ben's Hoops. You can read us at KSLSports.com. You can also find our stories. Tweet it out at KSL Sports. Make sure you go and give them a follow. All right, Tom. I cover the Jazz.
Yes, you do.
Well, that's kind of my thing. And it's been a little hard. Not that, you know, we're lucky to be covering sports, but Jazz haven't been playing very well lately. In fact, they'd lost 6 of 8, and their 2 wins had come over the Memphis Grizzlies, who are the 5th worst team in the NBA. I mean, they're young and they play hard, and they've got a couple of guys who Jazz fans are familiar with, Jay Crowder and Grayson Allen, who come out and play. And certainly Jay Crowder plays hard every night. And effort in the NBA will get you 25 wins a season. If you're the Knicks and you quit and you just don't care and nobody cares that you're playing, you can drop, you know, 70 games a year and really be historically awful. And maybe they are this season. But the Memphis Grizzlies aren't, but the Jazz still need to be winning games over teams other than the Memphis Grizzlies, certainly if they want to have the success that they hope to. And while last night's win over the Minnesota Timberwolves doesn't scream great win because it was the 6th straight loss for the Minnesota Timberwolves, who are really falling apart after a hot start, I thought it was a good win for the Jazz and a way for them to start to right the ship a little bit, which has been, you know, off course for a couple of weeks now.
It's been frustrating. And fortunately, I don't have to kind of witness it week in and week out. I can watch those games from the comfort of my couch, and when enough's enough, I can actually turn it off. But it's mind-boggling to think that just a couple months ago, prior to the season starting, you know, most people I'm sure that listen to the show have access to social media. You saw the power rankings of, yep, of title. I mean, the Jazz were right up there.
Those were top five basically
top five
everywhere.
And the Mike Conley thing just hasn't quite worked out yet. Although I'm not giving up hope. Have you given up hope on Mike yet?
No, not at all. And actually, I think it's a funny, it's kind of a funny thing what's going on now. And I think it's maybe beneficial because Mike Conley just missed his 4th straight game with that hamstring injury. He missed the second half of the Philadelphia 76ers game. And obviously a few positives have come out of it, definitely some negatives. The Jazz just haven't won many games since he went out, but they weren't winning a ton of games with him in the lineup. But the obvious positive is your fellow countryman, Joe Ingles, jumps into the starting lineup, and Joe's had by far the worst start to any season of his career in his 6th year this year. He's just shooting the ball poorly. He wasn't taking enough shots. He was a little discombobulated with his teammates because he was playing with the bench, which is basically all brand new players. Emmanuel Mudiay, Jeff Green, Ed Davis, George Niang, he played with a little bit last year, but George Niang wasn't playing when Mike Conley was healthy. So it really was a new situation for Joe to find himself in, and he wasn't playing well. And you saw it in the second half of that game against the 76ers. As soon as he was playing with Rudy Gobert and playing next to Donovan Mitchell or with Royce O'Neal, Joe came back and just looked instantly more comfortable. And that's a huge advantage because I think the Jazz hope now, Tom, is that Joe carries that back to the bench, because whether we end up seeing Mike Conley come back in the next couple of games, and the Jazz only play 2 games over the next 7 days, and it's against the Golden State Warriors tomorrow night, and then they play Orlando at home again, I want to say on Monday, the Jazz just have this great stretch of rest that they have not had. They basically played or traveled every single day this season, and there were 24, 25 games into the year now. It's been brutal for the Jazz. So this stretch is going to be good, and maybe you just sit Mike Conley and say, you know what, Mike, let's get that hamstring back to 100%. We don't want to risk you re-triggering it because hamstrings are so finicky as they are. And B, it's allowed Joe Ingles to get going. And for the Jazz to get to a point where they're really competing to win playoff series, not even win a championship or get to the finals, to win a playoff series, they need that extra player to step in and be great. And Joe Ingles has to be great, which is why they've invested as much money in him as they have. So I think Joe, in the starting lineup, if you can further ingrain this rhythm that he's finding, I think that's going to be successful, and then you hope it carries with him back to the bench.
But by no means am I any NBA expert or whatnot. I do appreciate the NBA, and as of last year, I've actually started to really enjoy watching the NBA. It's taken me some time. But my fear with Joe coming off the bench and my concern as to whether or not that project will work moving forward when he does end up going back to the bench is Joe, for at least as long as I've been watching and as Jazz fans have continued to watch, he's not an immediate impact player, in my opinion. He's not somebody that can come off the bench like Lou Williams and just start making it rain. I think it takes him time to figure out the speed and tempo of any given game and work his way into it. But coming off the bench, Ben, you don't have that luxury. I mean, you've got, you know, small allocated minutes throughout the course of any given game. If you're hot, you'll play longer. But for Joe, I think part of the problem is he takes a while to get going occasionally, and he's often that guy that you look at the box score on any given night, you'll see 4 assists, 12 points, handful of rebounds. And it's like, you know, Joe was productive,
yep.
Plus minus, he's plus 8 or something, but he kind of goes under the radar.
He's a secondary option, and I don't mean he's a secondary option because the Jazz have a primary scorer in Donovan Mitchell. He's a secondary option in every play he runs. So he'll, even when he's initiating the pick and roll, the first look is, can we get Rudy Gobert a dunk? And last year it was, can we get Derek Favors a dunk? And then off of that, Joe Ingles makes the second read. And that's, do I have a layup? Do I step out because they've gone under on the pick and I shoot a three, or I pick and pop? You know, and I basically do the pop even though somebody else is setting the screen for me. Do I bounce out and not attack the rim? So he's inherently a second option even in that play. And that's really his best play. Or as a spot-up shooter. And Tom, as we know, and you watched the game last night, the third quarter, the Jazz are moving the ball around. Secondary option is, hey, the initial player, Donovan Mitchell, whoever, gets the ball, gets into the paint, the defense is forced to rotate, and now all of a sudden there's somebody open on the three-point line. So that's Bojan Bogdanovic, and he kicks it to Royce in the corner, and Royce kicks it out to Joe Ingles. Okay, so now Joe is honestly the fourth option the Jazz had in this move, and it's the best shot they were going to get, but it took a prerequisite of three other actions before Joe got his option. So he is secondary in that sense. That's exactly what you're saying. Whereas the Lou Williams of the world come in, and they're a microwave, and they say, hey, just get me going, get me the ball, I'm going to score. Joe's not that player. So when he's playing with Emmanuel Mudiay and he's playing with Jeff Green and he's playing with Ed Davis, he's struggled because the Jazz have asked him to do a little bit more of that creation, that initiation, and that's not who he is. And I wonder if you can find a way to get that with him on the bench, and if not, if you have to move him to the starting lineup. And that creates a difficult question of, what do you do with Royce O'Neal, or what do you do with Mike Conley, or is there a chance you could bring Bojan Bogdanovic off the bench, who is more of that go-to, I will start it, I will get it going, as long as as long as I can get the ball. And that's tough because he's getting so much money this year. Bojan Bogdanovic might not be up for that type of role.
This might be a really silly question, and it sounds like we're running out of time, so you might not have much time to answer it. But why is it so hard to flick the ball from sideline to sideline? I mean, seriously, like, you watched the Golden State Warriors from a couple of years ago. It's not rocket science, right? Or at least they didn't make it seem to be. You attack the paint. If the defense collapses, you kick the ball outside. You flick it around until you get an open shot. And if the layup, say you take the layup, you don't even need to kick it outside.
Yeah. If you have the greatest three-point shooters in the history of the game, it's really easy. And that's what the Golden State Warriors had. And then you need somebody who's good enough off the dribble to be a threat. So watch Dante Exum next time he plays, and he's not playing right now. Dante Exum can beat any player in the NBA off the dribble, but when he gets to the paint, he can't finish. So no one on the defense has to leave their man on the perimeter to go and make sure they stop him at the bench. All right, when we come back, let's talk a little bit about Jordan Love. Actually, a couple of mock drafts I've got pulled up still have him getting drafted extremely high, Tom. We'll talk about that, what it means for Utah State. This is KSL Unrivaled, Ben Anderson, Tom Hackett, powered by KSL Sports. KSL Unrivaled, Ben Anderson, Tom Hackett, filling in for Alex and Scott today. We appreciate you tuning in. You can find us on Twitter at Tom Can't Hackett. You remember Tom from his time at the University of Utah. You can find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. We both write for KSLSports.com, where you can find our coverage as well. Make sure you go check it out, KSLSports.com. All right, Tom, really quickly, let's talk about Jordan Love. And Jordan Love still declares for the NFL draft, was expected to be a first-round pick after his sophomore season. Has a major, not major, but a significant step back his junior season. Utah State certainly takes a major step back, and he still declares. I think it's good that he declared rather than transferred. I think that would have done more harm to Utah State than if he declares for the draft and even falls a couple of rounds. I would rather see that if I'm an Aggie fan.
Right, I agree. I did see a few days ago, maybe a week ago now, that Jordan came out with a statement saying, you know, I'm going to put my grades in, see what they come back as to the NFL scouts and executives, and I'll base my decision off that. And I don't think there was any way he was going to stay at Utah State, right? He basically said, if the grade's not good and they don't think I'm a day one, day two pick, then I'm probably going to take my talents elsewhere. If it is, then I'm going to the draft, and it looks like the draft came back. You said you've seen some draft boards. And
so I've got a couple of mock drafts pulled up. I've got CBS Sports and I've got Sports Illustrated. CBS Sports still has them going 14th overall. We've got Jordan Love going number 14 to the Raiders right now, which is actually funny because not stylistically his comp, but maybe his ideal draft comp is what happened with Derek Carr with the Raiders, which was projected to be a first-round pick, ended up slipping a little bit. I want to say he fell to the first pick of the second round, and the Raiders still got him. And then he came in, and he was really good early on in his career, and I know he's since tailed off, which is why the Raiders might be drafting a quarterback in the first round again this year, but that might be the ideal situation for him. Now, I hope he makes as much money as possible, and if you want to make him the number one overall pick and someone wants to give him $50 million, fantastic. It's not going to happen. Then it comes down to finding a spot which is going to have the best opportunity for him to succeed. And truthfully, I don't know if that's going to the Miami Dolphins next year, who are miserable, desperately need a quarterback because they're not going to stick with Josh Rosen, and throw him out there and say, okay, you've got to start winning us football games, otherwise we're going to give up on you. Because that eats even good quarterbacks up. I mean, Sam Darnold has struggled early on with the Jets, your former team. I mean,
you can't call the Jets my former team.
Yes, I can.
I had a cup of coffee with them.
Who else did you play for?
I worked out with the Detroit Lions.
Oh, you did? Okay, so you actually did get a couple teams. So you've got a few former teams.
I had a workout. I spent like 9 hours in Detroit, okay? Although, here, they did fly me first class there and back. When I technically signed with the Jets, I was in economy.
Just to really?
So if you're weighing your options between Jets and Lions, take the Lions. They'll put you up in first class, give you much better food.
Scott said the same thing. He actually said that's a world-class organization.
Yes, he has.
Since
they've
really taken care of them.
They do.
That's awesome.
It's good.
Too bad the Jets haven't.
No, and you'd think it'd be the other way around, right? Detroit, not known for its nice.
Right, and New York is one of the greatest cities in the world.
Anyway.
Okay, so Sports Illustrated doesn't have Jordan Love going in the first round.
Okay.
Here's what we do know. Joe Burrow's going to be the top overall pick. Tua Tagovailoa is probably going to be a top five pick, despite his injury.
Has he declared?
No, but I can't imagine he goes back. And then Justin Herbert's going to be a top 10 pick.
Top 10 pick.
So you're going to get three guys in the top 10.
I agree.
There is not a guaranteed quarterback to go the rest of the draft, and a lot of people think Jordan Love's that next best player.
It is a good year for somebody like Jordan Love to declare for the NFL because you don't have as much competition as maybe you normally would, right? And let's be frank, he's 6'4", 225. He's a talent. He threw the ball at about 65% 2018. He dropped 4 or 5% this year. He's about 60%, which is difficult, but he did lose a lot of talent at the receiving position last year. They had that incredible tight end that departed, and then a number of wide receivers that he loved was not playing with this year. So I don't think, I guess first of all, being in the media here in Utah, the higher Jordan Love goes, the better it is for everybody here in the state.
And certainly great for Gary Anderson.
Great for Gary. Puts his program back on the map, if you will, and quarterbacks maybe around the country will see what Jordan did and say, I can go to Utah State and still become a first-round pick. So I am all for him going as high as possible. I don't think the year he is coming off warrants a first-round selection, personally.
I hope he doesn't go to the Dolphins with the 22nd or 23rd pick because I think they're going to ask too much of him quickly. If he goes later in the first round and the team says, you know what, we had a high draft grade on him and he's available at 29 or he's available at 30 to back up Tom Brady or back up Drew Brees for the next several years, that's a great fit because he can sit, he can learn the NFL game, and he can keep developing. Let's get to today's MVP.
The unrivaled MVP. Scott and Alex crowned tonight's most valuable player. The unrivaled MVP.
All right, Tom, unrivaled MVP. We do our MVP of the day, last 24 hours. That's the direction I'm going to head. Who's your guy? Who's your man? Who's your woman today?
No, my guy is Coach Kyle Whittingham.
Okay.
So earlier today, for those that don't have access to social media, a photo was published on the Twitter waves where he was doing a one-on-one interview with somebody down there in San Antonio.
In fact, you can find it at KSL Sports.
There you go. I didn't even know. But we do now. And he's rocking these alligator skinned, hope they're not real, hope they're fake alligator skin. Yeah, 2019, you got to be sensitive there.
I don't care.
I know you don't.
I live in Florida and the gators are awful. You're supposed to not let your dogs too far off the leash because alligators will eat your little
you
dogs
lived
if
in
you
Florida?
Have them. I did. I lived in Orlando for a little while.
Right. Well, they taste good, which I probably shouldn't say considering it's 2019, but they're a good meat. And anyway, he's rocking these cowboy boots that are made of alligator skin. Very fancy, and I think, if I were to guess, that somebody is paying him to wear them. I mean, he does not rock cowboy boots. No. Never seen it in my life. Coach Whittingham rocking.
In fact, the only coach I've seen in recent history wear cowboy boots, I think, is Todd Graham when he was at Arizona State. He's the weirdest guy. He was so weird at Pac-12 Media Day, but he's a short little guy and he liked to wear cowboy boots. He kind of looked like their mascot, which was always funny about
Todd
Graham.
He had that NSYNC microphone, you know, that he would wear.
He did.
Ugh. He had small man syndrome, I think. He was a feisty little fella.
I think pocket rocket. I think Kyle Whittingham understands he's recruiting, right? He's wearing some boots. He's trying to talk to mom and dad with those boots. He's not trying to talk to the kids, but he's sending out a sign that, hey, I get Texas. And Utah's actually done pretty low, pretty well, in Texas over the last couple of years, and I think they're going to go back to there. In fact, we know they have. They've already flipped a couple of Texas recruits.
Anyway, there's some pokey odd boots, and they could do some damage if he's not too careful. But well done to Coach Whittingham for donning the Texas style, something I would never do. Ben, who's your MVP?
My MVP, you know what? I'm gonna cheat, and I'm going to go with four players, and that's the entire Jazz bench.
I like that.
Because the Jazz bench actually last night, for the first time maybe as a unit, was good. The whole unit was good. Jeff Green was plus 12. George Niang was plus 12. Ed Davis was plus 12. And Emmanuel Mudiay was plus 15. The highest plus minus of anyone in the starting lineup was plus 5 from Donovan Mitchell. So despite the fact that Ingles, Gobert, and Donovan all had 20 points or more, which is great if you can have a trio of guys who can score 20 or more in a game, you're going to win basically every game when that happens. It was actually the Jazz bench, which has been costing them games recently, coming in and playing as well as they did, including, you know, Ed Davis kind of finally had a good defensive game and grabbed 3 rebounds. He only played 12 minutes, and that's as many minutes as he's supposed to be getting. But he came and I actually thought for maybe the first time he started to make his impact felt in this game. And they shot the ball really well. Overall, they ended up shooting 7 of 11 from the 3-point line. Emmanuel Mudiay had 13 points. Quinn Snyder really thought he was the tone setter for the Jazz coming off the bench. So that was a good start. All right, Tom, when we come back, Time named their Person of the Year. We will give you our People of the Year in the world of sports here in the state of Utah. And we'll continue to look at BYU and Utah. It's KSL Unrivaled, powered by KSL Sports.
KSL's Unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
KSL Unrivaled, Ben Anderson, Tom Hackett, filling in for Alex Keery and Scott Mitchell today. Huge thanks to those two for entrusting us with their show that we won't run it off the rails. We already have, but we will continue to try and keep this thing moving forward. We got one more hour with you. Going to do some fun things. We'll talk a little bit about the Times Person of the Year. Not the actual person, but we'll talk about our version. If we were to give it Utah's Sports Person of the Year, Tom and I will give you our thoughts on that coming up here in just a moment. And maybe we can even look at the decade, because we're wrapping up a decade here, Tom.
That's crazy.
Which is unbelievable. How long have you been in Utah?
I got here in 2012, so this is...
So almost a decade.
Well, yeah. I graduated high school in 2010.
Okay.
And it feels like last year.
You going to go back for your 10-year anniversary?
No.
You're not?
No.
Why not? You're married?
Ben, have you ever been to Australia?
Of course not.
Okay, it is a long trip.
Yeah. Like, you stop in Hawaii? How do you do it? Honestly,
no,
how do you get there?
Go. You go from Salt Lake to L.A., and from L.A., you're strapped to that seat for 15 hours, and away you go.
Yikes.
Yeah, I'm not going to go for, like, some high school reunion, you know?
I don't know, maybe see mom and dad.
I would love to see mom and dad. If I ever go home, it's because I want to see my mom and dad and not go to a high school reunion.
Okay.
You know?
But you could show off all the great things you've done since high school.
Like?
You won 2 Ray Guy Awards.
Yeah. That.
Does anyone know what that is?
No.
Are you a celebrity in Australia?
No.
Are you a celebrity in Australia?
I am not. The current punter-up at the University of Utah, Ben Lennon, is.
Because he was more famous when he was there?
Yes. He played a professional Australian rules football.
And you did?
He was a top 10 draft pick.
You played club. Oh, okay. They do drafts in Australian rules football?
Yeah, he was like a number 8 overall pick.
So why did he leave?
He was kind of a bust.
Yeah. He was not very good?
He was, like, everybody that makes that level's good, but he didn't eventuate to what they were hoping he would.
What position did he play? I don't know. That's not going to mean anything, because whatever you tell me, I'm not going to know what position it is. But what did he play?
He played on the half-forward flank. Let's not go into it.
And that's an important position.
It's up there.
Okay.
Every position. Here's the difference between Australian rules football and American football. Australian rules football, every single position on the field can have an impact in the game.
Yeah.
It took me 2 games playing punter for the University of Utah to realize I had no impact on the game, on the outcome of the game. I had no impact.
That's not true at all.
I'm telling you, I could net punt, and the punting geeks out there will understand, those that don't, Google it. I could net punt 50 yards a game, which is good,
yep.
Really good.
Yes.
We would still lose. It happened, like, a number of times.
Well, it's because you had a bad offense.
Travis, stop throwing picks.
Yeah.
He's not in town,
by all on him.
Travis is in town.
Like, that UCLA game wasn't all on Travis.
Yeah, but, you know, you throw the ball over the middle, high, you're asking it to
get
picked.
He had a velocity issue. He had a good fastball.
Anyway.
He's Randy Johnson up there.
We love Trav. He's in town. Happy birthday for this,
birthday.
This upcoming
I saw him on
Saturday.
Twitter.
So we'll have some fun.
Can I come?
You can. You can. You come to Park City.
Jeremy, let's fire up the cut.
The cut at 8:05. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
All right, find us on Twitter at Tom Can't Hack It. That's where you can disagree with us. You can find us at Ben's Hoops on Twitter. And, of course, follow us at KSLSports.com and on KSL Sports or at KSL Sports on Twitter. Love to hear from you. All right, Tom, we're talking about the Time Person of the Year. Now, of course, Time named Greta Thunberg, the 16-year-old climate change activist from Sweden, who's, you know, been a very high-profile teenager.
Influential.
That's a good name. Hence the most influential person. Yes, the person of the year from Time Magazine. If we were to adjust this and put it to the state of Utah, specifically in the world of sports, do you have a favorite for who's been the most influential or the person of the year here in the state of Utah?
I actually have the same person, whether it's this year or the decade.
Okay.
Which I don't feel good about.
Okay. Well, it can be right.
But it's you know. Kyle Whittingham for me.
Okay.
So the University of Utah football team, by far the biggest show in town this season. Now,
yep.
The Jazz can change that around next year, right? But they haven't been great this to start the 2019-2020 campaign. So it's got to be something. To me, it's got to be Utah football related. They were number fifth in the country. Coach Kyle Whittingham, big reason as to why, hiring Andy Ludwig, who you could argue Tyler Huntley joined at the hip to Andy Ludwig. The defense, Morgan Scully, is phenomenal. And by the way, it sounds like Morgan Scully is going to take over as the next head coach after having his contract amended, as they call it, up there at the
hill. Which we should talk about coming up here in about 10
we
minutes.
We should.
Let's talk about
but,
that.
Regardless. And then for the decade, I'm going to go with Coach Whittingham as well, because to transition in 2011 from a Mountain West conference into the Pac-12 is no easy feat. And he's been able to do it. And I know there were a few rocky years there, 2012 and 2013, where the team went 5-7 in back-to-back seasons. But outside of those 2 years, Ben, he's, I think, had a winning record and taken the team to bowl games year in and year out. It's not easy. It's not hard. He's done a tremendous job. Made it feel and look seamless. Utah fans should be happy they have head coach Kyle Whittingham at the helm.
And it's basically been a straight incline line of success. You know, yeah, you missed the bowl game for 2 years, but what, you were 5 wins both seasons, and then you jumped up and had a great year, and then you took a minor step back with when Tyler Huntley took over as a sophomore, but that ended up being the right decision, because look at how good they were this year and how actually good they were last year as well. You made back-to-back Pac-12 championship games. That's a huge step, and that's why I think it's easy to argue for Kyle Whittingham, specifically this season. And, you know, for a long time, I would have told you, if I was going to build a statue of any coach at Utah on campus, it would have been Urban Meyer. Because, I mean, I remember Utah football before Urban Meyer and Utah football after Urban Meyer, and it's as stark a before and after in college football as anywhere in the world. I mean, Urban Meyer's two-year stint got Utah into the Pac-12.
How much credit do you give Ronnie McBride?
Well, a ton. Ron took that, you know, program from being nothing to being competitive and having NFL players kind of littered throughout, and was good and had ups and downs and had a top 10 season in the 90s. So Ron McBride absolutely deserves it, and maybe more as an ambassador to college football here
right.
in the state of Utah is maybe the greatest thing he's ever done.
I agree.
But Urban came in. I mean, Urban's one of the five best coaches on earth right now, and I mean, I know this list of 150 came out, and he was at 46, which is insane. He's arguably a top 10. I mean, if you were doing a coaching draft, he would go in the top 10.
I agree. Nick Saban's 2. Just to put some perspective into that 150 list.
Yes. It's insane to think that Urban, I get he has all these issues. I get
yep,
it.
Yep, yep.
He would be picked top 10.
I agree. He wins.
He wins.
That's
he wins championships.
Matters.
That's all that matters. And it's why he's going to get another job here. That's why I would have said Urban. What Kyle Whittingham has done since Urban left may replace that statue.
I think so as well. He's been here for a very long time. He constantly wins. He just needs that championship, Ben. He just needs a championship to really
conference championship,
and
he'll get it
to really solidify his name here in Utah. Who's your? Do you have a time? We're running out of time.
I've got to go the same way. I've got to go Tyler Huntley.
Okay,
because Tyler Huntley again changed my opinion of him as drastically as I've ever changed on an athlete here in the state of Utah. And not that I was not in on Tyler Huntley when Utah made the switch. I understood what they were doing. I saw what he could do well, but I also saw very frequently the things he did poorly. And what was amazing this year is those basically all disappeared with the exception of, what, one guest that he threw against Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game? I mean, guest on one pass. And, you know, Utah kind of did need to take a shot down the field. Even his bad pass, I understood why he took it.
You're talking about that first pick in
the double
coverage?
The first interception in double coverage. Yeah. And I understand Utah felt like, hey, let's see if we can gash him here. He changed his stripes as much as any player I've ever seen in one offseason. And yes, that's Andy Ludwig, and yes, that's Kyle Whittingham. But good for Tyler Huntley for not saying, I know it wins football games, and I'm going to trust me, not this new guy who came in. He said, no, I'm going to trust you. You're the coach. I'm going to change how I play. And as a result, I'm going to give my team a chance to win. I'm going to give myself a chance to have success beyond college football. And I think that's what we started to see from Tyler Huntley. So Tyler Huntley gets my Time Magazine local man of the year.
Man of the year. Player
Person
of the year.
Year.
Sporting Impact Player of the Year.
Who do you have? Tweet at us at Tom Can't Hack It. You can tweet at me at Ben's Hoops on Twitter. Of course, find us at KSLSports.com. When we come back, speaking of the University of Utah, Tyler Huntley leaving, what do they look like next year? And can BYU finally beat the Utes? We'll talk about that next. Coming up, it's KSL Unrivaled, powered by KSL Sports. KSL Unrivaled, Ben Anderson, Tom Hackett. Find him on Twitter at Tom Can't Hackett. Find me at Ben's Hoops. And, of course, read us every day at KSLSports.com. Tom.
Yes.
Utah's going to look a lot different next year.
They are.
They might look a lot different by the bowl game, this Utah football team, because we don't know how many seniors you're going to play. And because bowl games are funny. Were you there when Jason Thompson all of a sudden started playing against Colorado State in the Vegas Bowl? Was it the Vegas Bowl?
Yep.
All of a sudden, Jason Thompson, who was transferring in from Wyoming, right?
Yep.
And everyone thought he was going to be a quarterback. He actually did get on the field as a quarterback and then ended up as a safety, right?
Yeah, and then the next year against BYU, Kendall Thompson.
Okay, yeah.
Do you remember him?
Yes.
He just popped out of nowhere and decided to become a slot receiver.
Yeah, and actually made the NFL
against
as a receiver.
BYU. And played well. Yeah. Like Travis found him.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Yeah, it's funny. We might see something totally different, but that's neither here nor there. I do want to talk about Utah next season because Utah fans are a little disappointed with how the year ended, and understandably so. One of the great things about college football, in fact, I think it is the great thing about college football, is the turnover. Like, we'd love shake up in the status quo, especially as sports fans, which is why the two favorite things are firing the head coach and going to the backup quarterback. And it's why people love the NFL draft, because it's the next great thing. And that's why I love the NBA draft and why I've tried to cover it as much as possible. But we love trades. We love all of it. We love change. And next year, Utah has as much change as they've had in, I mean,
a really long time.
There's long as time. Little continuity between one season to the next as we've seen. Utah's entire defensive line is going to be different.
Yes.
Utah's going to have a new linebacker, which we can talk about some of the names that might be out there. Utah's basically entire secondary is going to be gone with the exception of Javelin Guidry, unless he could technically declare if he wanted to, right? He's a junior, but he's not going to.
He shouldn't.
Unless someone said, hey, you're a fourth-round pick. Like, we love you.
Like, see ya.
Yeah, he should leave then, but that doesn't sound like anyone's talked about him that way. The offensive line should have actually some continuity because they were pretty young this year.
They basically only lose Darren Polo, and
but
that's
it is their best player.
Yes, so left tackle.
That's tough. But they have a couple of tackles lined up, so that's a good thing. Running back will be new, but you have names that you'll be familiar with.
You get a lot back at the receiver.
Actually, the wide receiver core next year coming back is the best Utah's had since they've been in the Pac-12.
I think you only lose Damari Simpkins.
Yep. And honestly, of the Hollandale trio, he was the third.
Yes,
he was three.
Brant Keithy returns,
and he wore number three, right?
Yes.
It was fitting.
Yes. Unfortunate.
And hey, Damari was great. I'm not trying to bag on Damari.
No, he's good.
He came in and did exactly what he needed to do for Utah football.
He'll be in the stands cheering on Zach Moss come Sunday.
Yeah.
I don't think he makes it.
No. He might get a cup of coffee, like we mentioned.
Yeah.
And maybe he can prove himself as a special teams player that can get out there and do something.
Damari, if you're listening, it's a really solid cup of coffee. Like, it is strong.
Yeah.
Hey, rich, no,
everyone
no milk,
would love
no
that
cream.
Start. Yeah, everyone would love that start.
Forget
to their
about
life.
Sugar.
Right.
So, anyway,
what is he? 21 years old?
Yeah, he'll
you know,
be 22.
What else are you gonna do? So good for him. Good luck, and I hope he does make a camp or you know makes a team for a year. That would be incredible. But so Utah looks totally different. The
you
nice
break
thing
in a
is
new quarterback,
and then oh yeah,
the most
I forgot
important
to mention
position
quarterback. Let's talk about the wide receivers really quick,
okay.
Just because they're coming back, and then we don't have to talk about
okay.
it. Samson Ekwue is
yes.
coming back. Brian Thompson's coming back, who we haven't seen because he hurt himself.
Hopefully he plays in the bowl game.
Hopefully he plays in the bowl game. It would be nice for
we'll
Utah.
See.
It's probably not a huge deal. If he's not 100%, they'll play him. Britton Covey comes back, which I think will be very interesting to see what he's able to do. You get Solomon Enos coming back. I think he has a breakout season next year, at least steps up. And he had some really nice plays, including in the Pac-12 championship game. And then most importantly is you get Brant Keithy
yes.
back, who's your best offensive weapon going into the season next year, and that includes Jordan Wilmore and Devon Brumfield,
yes.
excuse me. I think Keithy's your best player coming back on offense next year.
Yeah, depending on what happens at the quarterback position, obviously. If the quarterback, whether it's Cam Rising, Jake Bentley, or somebody else, believe it or not, I guess it could technically be somebody else, although I don't think it will be. I hope they play well, and I think they can, although who knows, because they haven't been tested. And Brant Keithy, however, is a menace. He's a force to be reckoned with, honestly. He is this hybrid tight end, right? This new age tight end
yep.
that you see a lot of in the NFL.
Sure.
Which is why I think he's got a red hot chance to play on Sundays. But
absolutely.
He's
it would be stunning at this point if he doesn't play in the NFL.
He's not the best blocker, but everything else, he's superb.
Yep.
Route runner, catcher, drops a few balls that he shouldn't, so maybe you can work on that in the offseason. But he's a talent, I agree.
So looking at Utah, then, let's look at the quarterbacks. And those are a couple of names that you mentioned. Jake Bentley.
Yes.
He's transferring from South Carolina.
Yes.
Former four-star recruit.
Yep.
Coming over. Utah's seen this. I mean, this is not... Every college football team has seen this. The four-star kid who goes to a higher-profile school. I don't know if South Carolina is higher-profile than Utah, but in the South, they would tell you it is. And gets hurt, loses his job, doesn't want to compete next season, so he goes and finds another spot that has an opening. And that's... I love the transfer portal. I have no problem with it. Do I think it has negatives? Yes, it has negatives. It's not all positive, but this is the real world we live in. Nothing is all positive other than Christmas. otherwise, there's going to be downfalls to everything that you're doing.
I agree.
So overwhelmingly, it's been good. And it's good for a guy like Jake Bentley, because if he loses his job next year and can't play, what benefit is it to him to being in South Carolina? So go and compete for a job at Utah, and he's likely only going to be competing with Cam Rising. I know there's going to be some other names in there, and certainly, you know, Kyle Whittingham's going to give everyone an opportunity to come in. Jason Shelley thinks he's probably deserving of that starting spot because he's been here so long at Utah. We'll see what those guys end up doing. What would you suspect going into the year? Because my understanding is Utes like both Cam Rising and Jake Bentley quite a bit.
Very much. So I think all four quarterbacks. Let's not forget about Drew Lisk, right? The Liskinator. He is returning from what I'm hearing. So they're all going to be here there in spring. I think Lisk's best suited at Weber State. He'll play. He's not a bad quarterback either,
yep.
mind you. He's on scholarship at Utah. He's doing something right. Shelley will get beat out by probably both Rising and Bentley during spring. He should transfer, which would be good for both parties. And then it's a toss-up between Bentley and Rising. I haven't seen much of Rising. He's on the scout team, or at least he was this
yep.
season. It's always hard to judge people on the scout team. Half the time, they're throwing 50-50 balls up on purpose to try and get the defense better prepared for when the opportunity comes to intercept a pass that upcoming week. Jake Bentley is a guy that will compete. He's an Andy Ludwig guy. He wouldn't come here otherwise.
Yep.
He was a 2018 team captain. He won the 2018 Leadership Award out there in South Carolina for offense. He's highly regarded. He has strong numbers when he does play. Last year, he put up impressive numbers in the SEC. And so I think he really does compete with Cam Rising. And what I'm hearing from Cam Rising is he's beloved by the Utah coaches.
Yep.
His ability to recruit, anytime he hosts a recruit,
yeah.
they commit.
Especially a Texas kid.
Yeah.
yeah.
And he's fun. He's got a great personality. He's a talent. He can move. He can throw the ball on the run. He's strong. He's big. He's big-bodied. He's hard to bring down. I mean, you name it, he has it.
He's more similar to Tyler Huntley than Jake Bentley.
Yes. But let's not make any mistake. If you can perform in practice, it's one thing. It's not always going to replicate into a game scenario. You don't know what you have until September 5th, I believe, is when Utah plays BYU. And I'll do this. I'll talk about this the entire offseason, Ben. My big take, I guess, for the rivalry game in 2019, if BYU cannot beat Utah next year, burn the rivalry down. It's over. Forget about it. Dude, you just stop playing the game.
Let's talk about that more coming up in the next segment. Here's what I think about Jake Bentley. What Tyler Huntley's best strength this year was not his dual threat ability. It was his ability to sit in the pocket and deliver throws and then keep plays alive when he had to. If Cam Rising can be that guy, great. If he has to run to be good, Jake Bentley probably wins the job. Because if you can drop back and move the ball and then hand the ball off to your good running back, which Utah has again next year, do that. I think every offensive coordinator is going to take that because it limits the opportunity for you to make mistakes. All right, when we come back, he's Tom Hackett. I'm Ben Anderson. We'll talk about what happens in the rivalry game next year because Utah does look so different and because BYU should have some consistency coming back next season. Is this finally the year BYU is able to break through? It's KSL Unrivaled, brought to you by KSL Sports.
KSL's Unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
KSL Unrivaled, Ben Anderson, Tom Hackett filling in for Scott and Alex today. Big thanks to them letting us jump on the show. You can find us on Twitter at Tom Kent Hackett. You can find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. And of course, you can read us every day at KSLSports.com. Tom covers Utah, Tom covers RSL, I cover a lot of Utah Jazz, and then generally some random opinions thrown in here and there, plus Tom's...
You've been in the market for a long time.
I've been in the market a long time.
There's credibility there.
You moved here in 2012.
2012.
So I started in this business in 2011, so you and I are kind of in the same boat, even though you were playing.
Yeah, I wasn't in this business.
And you've done one thing much better than I've ever done anything in my life, and that was kick a football.
I got lucky a lot of the time.
You can't get lucky that often. I believe a couple of those were probably lucky.
Just throw it on the boot, hope nothing happens.
If it goes out of bounds at the right spot or dies in the right spot. Yeah. But you did it at a really high level.
I appreciate that. So
we've been talking about what Utah looks like next year, Utah football, because they're going to go through a dramatic change, specifically on the defensive side of the ball. You're going to be almost completely different. Defensive line is going to be basically brand new. Secondary is going to be mostly brand new, though they did have a couple of kids that were probably third string this year. They're going to be moved up to starters, which is going to be a tough. I mean, the Pac-12 will abuse you if they find weaknesses in your secondary because, you know, nobody expected Laviska Shenault last year to turn into Laviska Shenault.
Yes,
he's a first-round pick. You know, USC has as talented a wide receiving core as there is in the NFL, or I should say in college football, 1 through 4.
Yes.
So, and that's going to happen again next year. It's not like they're those players, yes, they go to the NFL, there's a next crop of kids. They're going to be absolutely incredible.
By the way, we were talking earlier about bowl games and who plays or who doesn't play. Michael Pittman Jr., who, outside of Laviska Shenault, is probably the second best receiver in the Pac-12. They're going to USC's going to the holiday bill. He's already said he's going to come play in it, which I think is cool.
Yeah,
I think it's really, really cool to see.
I have no problem with kids wanting to play in the bowl game.
Surprising, though. That's, I guess, why I'm saying it. I'm surprised to see him play.
Great if the kids want to play. I would never criticize them for not wanting to
play. I agree. I'm with you.
I get that. Is next year the year, with all this change at Utah, the defensive line, the secondary, at least one linebacker, because Francis Bernard's probably going to go to the NFL next season. I mean, probably gets drafted and probably plays in the NFL next year. That's different. Utah's offensive line should be pretty good, but they'll have a brand new quarterback, new running back. Is this finally the year BYU can break through and beat Utah in 2020?
It has to be. There is no question about it. No ifs, no buts, whatever. You have to find a way to beat the boys in red if you are BYU. And by the way, I think BYU, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this as well, Ben, I think BYU loses their best player on offense and on defense heading into next season. I think Kyrus Tonga moves his talents onto the NFL. I think Matt Bushman, the tight end, moves towards the NFL as well. I just think both those players have to realize that there isn't enough talent around them. They're not going to achieve anything they haven't already achieved at the college level. And now that they're eligible to go and play in the National Football League, I think you take that and you run with it because I think they're both good enough to get drafted and move on from the BYU Cougars, which makes Kalani's job and all the assistant coaches' jobs and the players' job harder come September 5th when they play Utah. But they have to find a way to win. Otherwise, you burn the rivalry down. You stop playing it completely. It's over. Nobody cares. Yeah, it's done. It's over. It's finished.
Talon Shumway's gone next year. Micah Simon's gone from BYU. Aliva Hefo's gone. Now, they've got a good group of receivers behind them, some young guys, Dax Milne, the local kid, Gunnar Romney from Arizona. He steps up. He's good. I know they're looking at a grad transfer coming in as well to come in at wide receiver that could be helpful. I don't know who starts next year at quarterback for BYU. We don't know who does it at Utah. Why?
It has to.
Why?
Because I think he's the most talented quarterback they have.
Why? Okay. He might be the most talented as far as versatility goes, as far as his ability to make those highlight reel plays. And he made a couple of them. You know, he got the Johnny Manziel comparisons. Those are good and bad comparisons. And I don't mean because of accuracy. I mean because of what it means of who you are as a player.
When he was healthy, and it was earlier on in the season, I thought the play calling was suspect, as did many BYU fans.
That's why they made the change halfway through the season to the changes that they made.
A-Rod took over, and it looked like a completely different offense. Sure, it wasn't perfect. It never was going to be, but it was better. It had some fluidity to it, right? You could kind of understand or grasp the concepts behind why that call was being played as opposed to a fly sweep. And so I just think you give A-Rod, who's worked with quarterbacks, was a former wide receiver, has done play calling in the past up at the U, in particular a couple of years ago back when I was there. I think you give him an entire offseason with Zach Wilson and see what happens. Because I think they can be good. I do. I think Zach Wilson can be really, really, really good at quarterback. I think he can play in the National Football League, although there is a lot of developing that needs to happen, and A-Rod's going to have a big part to play in that.
I think it makes sense looking at how much Utah is losing to say this is the year for BYU to win.
You have to.
BYU is losing not as much because they don't have eight guys going to the NFL like Utah is, but they are losing a ton, including their best player in the secondary, in Dion Gonwaluku. They're also losing Austin Lee. They're losing, who you mentioned earlier, Kyrus Tonga, who might be their best defensive player overall, certainly their most impactful player overall. You're losing, if you lose Matt Bushman, you're losing your best offensive player. You're losing three other high-level pass catchers. Their offensive line was not great this year, but is all young. Basically, the entire group is young and is going to be coming back next year. So in that sense, they, like Utah, should make a major jump from this year to next year. And I don't know who their best quarterback is, and I don't think BYU fans feel confident.
Who do you think could be their best?
It might be Baylor Romney.
I knew you were going to say that.
Why wouldn't I say it?
I disagree.
He was competitively a better player at times this year and more consistent than what we saw from Zach Wilson.
No, I think he's a great backup. I don't think he compares to Zach. I think Zach had an off year. He was beat up with injuries. He was rattled at times. I just don't think Baylor Romney is the answer. And the reason I give BYU the nod, I shouldn't say I give them the nod over Utah. I think Utah still probably ends up winning the game, but the reason they have a great, great chance of winning this game next season to kickstart the 2020 college football season for both BYU and Utah, I think they have the advantage of quarterback. And that's because they at least have somebody that's got good, significant reps under their belt. Utah breaking in somebody brand spanking
you. And Utah won't have that defensive line that's going to just wreak havoc.
They'll still have good players.
Max good players.
Tupai, Mika Tafua.
Yeah, and those are probably your defensive ends, right?
They're really good.
Do they both start next year,
or does
one backup?
No, I think they both start. They're too good.
Because you're probably pretty good there.
Yes.
And then you fill in the middle, and Utah's generally done a pretty good job finding 300-pounders that can throw
good
in the middle and really slow the run game down.
They're
and BYU didn't develop a running back this year that makes me think that next year they're going to be great.
They were dropping like flies, weren't they, the running back down in Provo. The most important position on the football field at any given time is the quarterback. And if you have the advantage at quarterback, then I think you have a big part to play in the outcome of any particular game. And for BYU and Utah next year, it's the only time BYU could ever get the better of Utah. And if they can't, burn it down, Ben.
But if Jake Bentley starts next year because he's a senior and he's put up the numbers he has and continues that from South Carolina at Utah and they've got a better offensive line, and what's a quarterback's best friend? It's a good offensive line. And what's number two? A running back. And what's number three?
Good
a reliable receiver. Tight end. And Utah's got all of those things.
I know. That,
and you've got the best offensive coordinator you've had since Kyle Whittingham has been the head coach both times.
Jake Bentley might take a while to get used to the altitude. I know I did.
And they're playing at Rice Eccles.
Yeah.
So it doesn't look good for BYU again next year, regardless of the quarterback.
Burn it.
No.
Burn the rivalry, burn the program.
Keep playing the game.
Just burn it.
I'm excited to have it. All right, when we come back, we're going to wrap this thing up. He's Tom Hackett. I'm Ben Anderson. This is KSL Unrivaled, powered by KSL Sports. KSL Unrivaled, Ben Anderson, Tom Hackett, filling in for Alex Carey and Scott Mitchell today. Happy holidays, everybody out there. You can find us on Twitter at Tom Can't Hackett. You can find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. Always love jumping on, filling in for those guys. Jump on even when they're here. So we appreciate them handing over the reins for us for a couple of hours here tonight. It's been very fun. We're wrapping this thing up a little bit, Tom, and I think Utah football, let's start with Utah football. Okay. We'll bounce around a little bit here. But I think Utah football, I said before the year, I thought they needed to make a New Year's Six bowl game to have a successful season. And I still feel that way a little bit. However, I will say overall their growth as a program has given me a different sense of what their potential is. Because I think as long as Andy Ludwig is here, Utah has a chance every season to win the Pac-12 South. And if you can do that, you can win the Pac-12 championship. And they will at some point. I think Witt will retire after it happens. And I bet it happens in the next few seasons.
I like that take. I agree with it. I think going into the season, it was Rose Bowl or bust. Rose Bowl playoff or bust. And I kind of am going to go back on that because I don't necessarily agree. I think this was a remarkable football season for any Utah fan, player, or anybody involved in the program. It was fun. It was exciting. There were blowout games week in and week out. And it just seemed and felt as though they were destined for something really special.
Yep.
And the way that the season ended will leave a sour, sour taste in so many people's mouths. It will leave a big, big mark, which is a real shame.
Yep.
Because they obviously lost to Oregon in less than convincing fashion. And so I don't know. I think it was a tremendous season that had a really, really bad ending.
Maybe this, though, does spur, and we'll know in the next few days as we've got the early signing period opening up in college football, maybe this creates the next superstar class that Utah recruits, like the Hollandale trio and all the kids that they've got that are going to the NFL now this year. Maybe Utah coming up, December 18th, and then through February, whatever the first Wednesday is, maybe Utah is able to add that next talent that not next season, but over the next 2, 3, 4 years rounds out into the next great football team. And, you know, if Utah every 5 years could have a top 10 team, you matter in college football.
I agree.
You matter in college football. I mean, if you're a top 25 team, and I think Utah should perennially be a top 25 team, every 4 years when you have that senior quarterback and the stars align, you should be a team that competes for top 15 and top 10. And if Utah can do that, whether that's with Kyle Whittingham or Morgan Scalley, who we kind of agree is the coach in waiting now for Utah, I think that's a fantastic sign for the Utes.
I agree.
Did BYU have a good year?
I thought BYU had about as good of a year as you can expect them to have. I'd probably assume that for BYU fans out there, they were a little disappointed. There were that, I think it was 3 week stretch where they lost to Toledo. They lost to South Florida.
Yeah. It was rough. That was a rough couple of weeks.
That, to me, is what 2019 BYU football season is going to look back on. When you look back on the 2019 season, you're going to say, oh, I remember that two-week stretch. Much like Utah football fans look back on their season and say, oh, I remember the Oregon game.
Right. Again, if you could give BYU the number of wins that they had and losses and say, here's what you're going to do. You're going to beat all the teams you're supposed to, which would have included Toledo and would have included South Florida, but you're going to lose to USC and you're going to lose to Boise State. Would you have taken it? They probably would have wanted wins over Boise State and USC. And you actually got those. You just dropped the ball against Toledo and South Florida. That's the weird part of BYU season. I actually think the number's okay, and the best thing to come out of it is Kalani Sitake got an extension.
I agree with that as well. Make no mistake, though, I could be wrong, and the optimistic BYU fan may look back on the 2019 season and say that win against USC was something really special, which it really was. That was an impressive victory for the BYU Cougars. And so hopefully for BYU fans out there, that's what they look back on as opposed to that 2-3 week stretch where they couldn't find a win to save themselves.
I just think it comes down to expectations going into the year. And even though the losses hurt worse than the wins feel good, which I think is a kind of a cliche in sports, but I think a lot of fans feel that way, which is why we will look at the Oregon loss for Utah as being more significant and the Toledo loss and the South Florida loss being more significant for BYU, other than the enormous highs that both teams had.
This is a conversation for another time, but I think BYU, the media department down there, the fan base, all-inclusive, I think they do themselves a disservice setting the expectation and the bar far too high year in and year out. They're just guaranteed to let themselves down. They're guaranteed to do it.
That's
because they hold their own media day, and all they talk about is probably Utah again in 2020, and they'll probably more than likely lose, and then they'll burn the whole program down, and then next thing you know, we won't have a BYU football team.
Spoken like a true Ute. You want to talk a little Jazz basketball?
I do. Who do they play next, Ben?
Golden State, tomorrow night.
Very nice. How's Alec Burks been?
He's fine.
He leads the team, doesn't he?
He's Alec Burks. You know, he's a high-level talent, not a great team player. is a very non-controversial person, is a very nice person, in all honesty. Alec Burks does nothing wrong other than not translate his skill sets into winning basketball. Like, he's one of the 450 best players in the world. And if you're that, you should be in the NBA. And he is. Now, he's probably between 350 and 450.
Sure.
And those guys rotate in and out of the league very rapidly. But he's in that conversation of one of those guys, and I hope he can get another deal out of this. Because I think good for him that he's been able to carve out the career that he has already and has made some good money in his life. But he's not going to do anything for the Golden State Warriors. And though they played tough with the Knicks last night, this should be a very easy win for the Jazz.
Which they need.
They need.
And you follow them closely, obviously. The fan base, not all that happy. The Utah Jazz fan base, obviously. Not being able to win games, a lot thought specifically prior to the season starting, they should have won. How do you try and tell the fan base, Ben, that everything's going to be okay? Is everything going to be okay?
Everything is going to be okay. And I think you got a good example last night. If teams end up becoming what we thought they were, rarely does a team really miss the mark versus what they should have been. Occasionally teams climb up and surprise you. Toronto Raptors last year, we knew we were going to be really good once they had Kawhi. I don't know if we thought they were going to be championship good, but they were really good, and they ended up winning the championship. I don't know if the Jazz are that Raptors team, but no one thought that Raptors team was going to win the championship until Game 6 of the finals when they won the championship. Everyone still thought Golden State was going to find a way to win it until Klay Thompson got hurt and Kevin Durant had the torn Achilles, and you know, everyone thought Milwaukee was going to steamroll them, or everyone thought Philly was going to win. So the good thing about the NBA is you really truly can still kind of surprisingly jump up and win a championship, and probably more so now than ever before because LeBron's getting a little bit older, because Kawhi was great but is oft injured and still is that way with the Clippers. So I think the Jazz will continue to get better. But what I was saying is no one expected Minnesota to be good this year, and they started out really hot, and now they've lost six straight and they're falling back to earth. Everyone expected the Jazz to be really good, and they started out slow. But teams end up becoming what we expect them to be, for the most part.
They also had a really hard strength of schedule.
And they had a really tough strength of schedule, and that really eases up. As we mentioned, they go Golden State, then they have 3 days off at home in Salt Lake City. They'll play Orlando, day off, travel to Atlanta, who's terrible. Then they travel to Charlotte, who's not good. They play Miami, who's tough. But then you come back with Portland. Clippers is a tough game, but then Detroit to end the year. Jazz should win a bunch of games coming up the rest of the season, so I think they're going to be just fine. I should say the rest of the year before they go into January of 2020. That's going to do it for us. All of our local teams are in good shape. Nobody had a truly bad year. Utah State fans might not be thrilled. Jordan Love might be a first-round draft pick.
If you are a sport fan living in the great state of Utah, you should be more than content.
It's pretty easy this year.
It is.
It was pretty easy this year.
Great time to be around.
And they're all in good shape. Gary's the right guy at Utah State. Kalani's the right guy at BYU. Witt's obviously the right guy at Utah. And Quinn Snyder and Dennis Lindsay are great for the Jazz.
And I know people don't care, but my guy, Jay Hill at Weber State, turn that program around. They're still fighting.
They'll still play this weekend.
Go Wildcats.
Still got some college football played locally. All right, big thanks to Jeremy running the board for us today, our producer. Hunter, am I saying that right? It's pronounced Hunter. Okay.
Hunter.
Our intern, it's his last day. It's my first day working with him and his last day. Tom, this was fun.
I liked it.
Thanks to Alex and Scott. Find us on Twitter at TomCan'tHackIt and Ben's Hoops. Read us at KSLSports.com. It's KSL Unrivaled.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.